Richmond! Where's all of my praises? I want everybody around the world to put your hands together because all the praise belongs to God. Here we go.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
WBAI Today is pleased to present Gary Null with WBAI's first Lifetime Achievement Award for his outstanding contributions to the WBAI communities. We present the Lifetime Achievement Award for the first time in our history in recognition of Gary Null's 43 years on the air on WBAI. It's the longest-running daily program on WBAI's history. Where's that Rocky music, which Gary so deserves? In recognition of Gary Null presenting alternative lifestyle programming to our listeners for all these years, for being a voice to the voiceless, a treasure trove, a virtual treasure trove of information, insight to the alternative healthcare community, the importance of a plant-based diet and alternatives to traditional medical approaches. In recognition of Gary Null's activism for all these years, he was fighting DDT, Monsanto, nuclear power, his efforts to put forth medical choice in the area of vaccines, and so many other approaches that he's presented to our listeners. And in recognition of all the help that Gary Null, where is that Rocky music? And in recognition of all the help that Gary Null has given listener sponsor WBAI over the years in fundraising, providing thank you gifts for our listeners, special events, films, and lectures, such as recently a sold-out Full House with his new film, Curing the Incurable. So in recognition of all of this, WBAI presents Gary Null with a special first-time Lifetime Achievement Award. Congratulations, Gary.
That was Linda Perry, Program Director for WBAI. Don't quite know what to say. Let me try to put this in a summary way. BAI, through its history, has had its up and downs, but one thing has been consistent. The different hosts, the program directors such as Maury Marksman, the arts directors such as Rick Harris, Rosemary Mealy, one of the finest station managers in the station's history, Lex Hickson, and all the others. These are people who believed in being a voice for the voiceless. That is what makes BAI different than all the other stations, commercial or non-commercial, in the United States. And to a larger degree, for many decades, that's what made Pacifica itself. I was on PFW in Washington for 36 years, and KPFK, Pacifica Station Los Angeles, for 33 years, overnight, 6 hours a week with Roy Tuckman. And it was a privilege to be able to help share information with the audience. And so my hope is that that since this is the first, that there'll be many more for all the other deserving hosts. And also, maybe at some point, you might consider this, just a thought. BAI could not exist without its volunteers, Jen Digman and all the others. And of course, right at the top of that list is Mitchell Cohen. Without them being there to support the station, being on its local station board, helping guide the station and keep it on track so it doesn't become ideological and in the interest of only a few instead of the interest of the many, the station simply wouldn't exist. So I believe that there's credit to go around. Just a thought. Because they're frequently the unsung heroes. Those of us who at least have the opportunity and the privilege of being on the air, we have a voice. And so we want to represent our voice through the voices of all those who have issues and they're not addressed. So, Linda, thank you very much for that Lifetime Achievement Award. It is appreciated. Let us now go to our regular programming. And in our regular program today, I'm going to be doing an in-depth, original report on why we must pay attention to what the mainstream media has been taking it upon itself the sole providers of what is scientific and accurate, when in point of fact, it has been nothing more than a propagandist for the mainstream pharmaceutical industry, the medical industrial complex, many other areas. There is one person in particular who has held sway and has been informing the media and has been its primary so-called expert, Dr. Stephen Barrett. And he is also in alignment with Wikipedia and Jimmy Wales and the skeptics. So we're going to have a shorter piece today, but it'll be an important piece. Now, please listen up. Tonight, on the Progressive Commentary Hour at 7 o'clock, I'll be doing the first of a two-part series. I may do both hours back-to-back. I may do one. They're very packed with information. And this is to show that the AMA operated in all of the areas of alternative health surreptitiously, behind the scenes, secretly, to prevent us, Blue Cross Blue Shield, universities, from accepting chiropractors or any other form of alternative practitioner. Now, this was adjudicated, and the AMA lost. The 11 largest, most powerful medical organization in America lost. And this was a seminal loss. I played a role in that. In fact, the chairman of the board of the AMA, when I wrote these two articles, originally, they're all updated now, challenged me. And so we wrote back and says, if you believe I've made any statement that's an error, show it. We'll correct it. That was the end of that conversation. So you're going to hear about the AMA and why should you be concerned about the AMA? Why should you should be concerned about saving chiropractic as an entire profession that was done back in the early 1970s? Because where the AMA no longer legally is allowed to denigrate chiropractic, it passed that baton off to those like Wikipedia and Stephen Barrett that has continued to denigrate a completely legitimate healing profession. So we're going to do what the mainstream media has never done. We're going to show you how they violated the law, they were found guilty, and yet everything remains the same. They're still quoted without question today. But we always start with the latest on health and healing, and I'm happy to do that again today. And we're going to begin by taking a look, and by the way, everything that I talk about on our health and nutrition updates is all supported by mainstream peer-reviewed literature. For example, from Stetson University comes an article about dietary supplements, the very things that Wikipedia would denigrate, but how it actually boosts cognitive function in vegetarians. Why? Because most vegetarians are not healthy vegetarians. Most vegans are completely unhealthy vegans. A lot of young people will become vegans by eating pizzas that are, you know, let's say, dairy-free or maybe meat-free. But it's still a refined carbohydrate. It is not healthy. You could have a pizza and drink a cola and say, I'm a vegan. That does not mean that you're a healthy vegan. So vegetarians who take the dietary supplement creatine, that's C-R-E-A-T-I-N-E, can enjoy improved brain function. Now that's important because we have about 7 million vegetarians and about 2.7 million vegans. And of those 2.7 million vegans, I'm going to suggest that probably maybe 15% are really healthy vegans, the rest are not. So the one thing that you want to make sure you're getting, and you can get a vegan source of creatine. I take creatine every day. And because it also helps the heart. So creatine is a chemical stored in the muscles and the brain, and it helps build lean muscle. In addition to being produced by the human body, creatine is also naturally occurring, unfortunately, in red meats and seaweed, but it all and dairy products. But you also can get it in a vegan form, and that can help your brain. So that's important. By the way, Stetson University is in Florida, and it studied vegetarian volunteers, as well as those who ate up to 10 or more servings of beef or chicken or pork or fish each week. And then they were put into two groups and to determine the impact upon brain and creatine levels. From the University of Louisville, could eating garlic reduce age-related memory problems? Well, consuming garlic helps counteract age-related changes in gut bacteria associated with memory problems. That's according to a new study conducted with mice. The benefit comes from what you've heard me mention many times, allyl sulfide, S-U-L-F-I-D-E. Now, that's a compound in garlic known for its health benefits. So when you administer garlic, and by the way, lightly, very lightly sauteing so it's translucent but not brown. Once garlic has turned brown, throw it away. Don't eat it. But in here in America, we cook things too fast at a high temperature, whereas when you're in Mediterranean countries, you'll see that they take their time and all the sauces are made slowly. There's no rushing. The last time I was in Europe, I'm going back this summer. I have to do some filming there. In fact, I got a film next week in Australia, Dr. Helen Caldicott, and about Fukushima, because in the new documentary I'm doing on the planet, no one at all is talking about Fukushima, as if, oh, that was 7 years ago. Yeah, and 100,000 gallons of radioactive water per day going into the ocean, causing a 1,000-by-1,000-mile dead zone. And to give you an idea, that's larger than most of the other dead zones combined. And those are mainly due to industrial fertilizers and phosphates in the water. But that means nothing can live in that water. And that same Fukushima goes down into the aquifer below the facility and then goes into the water that is used for people to drink and for growing and irrigating vegetables. And yet, we're not measuring any radioactivity in anything coming to the United States because the Obama administration says you don't have to. Well, that makes no sense. If you have that much pollution, we should be measuring for radioactivity everything that comes in, but we're not. So just remember that eating anything from Japan. Anyhow, this research on garlic being so good for you was done and published through the American Physiological Society's annual meeting. And how can I put this in simple lay language? Your gut, your intestines contain trillions of microorganisms, and we call that the gut microbiota, M-I-C-R-O-B-I-O-T-A. And every study I've seen shows that the more of these healthy microorganisms you have, the healthier your whole body is, including your brain. But along comes garlic, and it does a lot of good things because the gut microbiota is diminished as we grow older. A life stage when neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's develop and memory and cognitive abilities decline. Now, they don't have to, but based upon the choices we make, it's inevitable. In fact, just this last week before I had to leave New York to finish up this film, it was really something when I ran into an old friend, and he was telling me that he is so forgetful now that when he walks into a room, he doesn't remember why he walked in there. If he reads something, he can't remember what he read. If he sees a movie and an hour later someone says, what was the title of the film, he can't remember it. And this was a very bright guy in his career. And now, and I said, do you want me to help you? I'll be happy to provide you with a protocol. You know what his answer was? I'm not going to change. I said, well, you could, and you could get good results. He said, no. He said, and he's only 72 years old. And he said, no, at my age, you know, what am I going to do? I'm retired. I said, well, the fact that you've retired doesn't mean that you can't have a future. You can't do something vital. But in his mind, it was closed door. Anyhow, if he had taken garlic every day, that oral allosulfide would be able to help him have a stronger mind, better cognition, better memory, short-term memory especially, because what goes on in the gut goes on in the brain. And also, there's the over-the-counter antioxidant mix is improving vascular health in some heart failure patients. This could save lives. This is from the University of Utah. Simply stated, patients given a mix of vitamin C, E, and alpha-lipoic acid showed improvement in markers of vascular health. That's good. We're running a little behind today because of the introduction of the show, so we're going to take a break and come right back. We're going to go to Dr. Suzanne Humphreys first, because she makes a lot of sense when it comes to measles and shedding, especially since the mainstream media is active participants in trying to shame parents and shame people who question the validity of all the vaccines. Even if they're pro-vaccine, they're still being attacked. And you realize what the likely outcome of this is: mandatory vaccines for children, and if you refuse to, then the parent is turned over to Child Protective Services, and then the parents could be arrested, and the child could be taken into custody. That's what we're facing at this moment as I'm speaking. Then that's going to lead way for people to demand adults to be mandatorily vaccinated, with over 200 vaccines in the pipeline, and they won't develop those unless they know that they're going to be able to give them into your body. There's no science on their side. That's important. So let's now go to, Dr. Suzanne Humphreys.
Another study from Croatia, and there were several cases of measles outbreaks occurring in children who had just been vaccinated. And so they looked at the strain. They're having intensive surveillance of measles during this period of time. And so they looked at, with this DNA or genetic fingerprinting, what strains they were. And it was the vaccine strain that they were infected with. So not only did they become sick from measles from the strain that they were vaccinated with, but they were contagious. And this article, the key to this article is that it said that in the past, we would have never known this. It would have either been considered a different disease. It would have been contributed, like they would have said it was rubella or something like that. Or they would have considered that it was just a wild-type virus that the person was subsequently infected with before they had a chance to mount an immune response. But because now we have this added surveillance and this new technology that we can distinguish between strains, we're finding that these cases, we used to think that measles, mumps, and rubella vaccines didn't shed and didn't cause disease, but now we're finding that for all three of them, not only is the immune response not what we thought, but that for rubella and measles, at least for sure, I can tell you that those people are shedding virus, have the potential to shed virus and be infective.
Okay. Listen to what she just said. If you don't understand it for some reason, here's the bottom line. When they were saying that you could not go to school if you were not vaccinated because you could put the other students at risk, in point of fact, most of the students who have come down with the measles had already been vaccinated. So that challenges the idea that having antibodies to a antigen in and of itself is protective, or how long that protection would last if there's some measure of protection, but there's no studies to actually do this scientifically because there's so many other mitigating circumstances that can influence a person's viral bacterial infection levels. Separately, there were no cases of measles in the school that was in question. Thirdly, zero people died from measles in a 17-year period. That's the government's own statistics, but over 107 died from the measles vaccine. And yet that is never reported by the media. And also, once you have a vaccination of measles vaccine, you're shedding, meaning it's coming out of your nose, out of your mouth, saliva and mucus out of the nose. And think of how many times, over 200 times a day, a person touched the nose or mouth. Now it's on your fingers. Now it's on your pencils, pens, doorknobs, and other, even a remote control. So a vaccinated student going back into a school, and they're allowed to go back in because, quote, they were vaccinated, they're actually capable of spreading the measles inside the school. And studies have shown that many of the students coming down with measles in different places, it is the measles vaccine that is causing that phenomena. Just want to share that with you. And so we've gotten it all wrong on measles, but the pharmaceutical industry is behind this, and ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, is behind this, and it's a big industry. Before the program's over, I'm going to show you the profits that the pharmaceutical industry has made just in the last year. They're off the chart. But now I want to take you over and play just 5 minutes of Dr. Graham Downing continuing to explain why you should be very concerned about 5G, and I intend to play 5 or 6 minutes every single day to keep sharing this, and we're in the midst of doing the most definitive article ever published or ever written on the subject of the dangers of 5G. There's no research. There's no scientific studies they've done on the consequence to having a 5G tower near them. Yet one school had 4 children come down with cancer because there was a 5G on their property, so they removed it. That's a little after the fact. We shouldn't be always the victims of these human experiments so some company can profit from it. Now, about 5 minutes, Dr. Graham Downing.
In Tennessee Updated, mirror model of the real world that can be used to predict and evaluate future events and courses of action. Military have already doing it. This was a particular project they did called MNE4. They used data from various countries in Europe and America. And what they did, they used it as an exercise to see how they could influence another country to do what they wanted them to do. These things are up and running at all sorts of level, commercially and militarily. But they need information, they need data, and they need 5G to bring this about. Okay, so 5G isn't just about it's going to give you cancer and it's very dangerous. There's a whole other aspect to this. Who understands that AI is a massive threat to your jobs? These are serious studies from serious academic schools, all predicted probably the next 10 years, 12 years, probably about half of you are going to lose your job to AI technology. Okay, and in some countries, up to 60 to 80%. They need 5G to bring this technology on board. There are various people involved in this. I'm going to take you down a tangent. This is a guy, he's a professor, very well respected. He's the head of something called the Basic Income Earth Network, because if you're going to lose your job, you need to be paid, so you need a basic income. Sounds very, very, sounds great. So they're all pushing this. In fact, it's been pushed globally. He's also interested in linguistic justice. Now, what linguistic justice means, if you're English speaking, you need to pay a tax to someone who doesn't speak English, because they need to speak English in order to get on in the world. This is the kind of thinking of these people, okay? You're dealing with some very interesting characters. Other professors are involved in this, talking about we need this kind of stuff. Basic income, the pilots are everywhere in the world because they know you are going to lose your job, so they're going to have to give you a basic income. The problem is, you become poorer on basic income. Also, I want to ask you a question. When the government says to you, I'm going to give you money, do you think that's going to be the end of it? Do you think you might be told where you can live and what you can do? Okay, and this is what you need to start thinking. There's a social side to this technology, and it's very well researched. There's another guy from the Royal Society of Arts, which I've said to Ian before and said on stage, I thought was a benign organization. I didn't realize they were activists. This guy here, no disrespect to him, but I disagree with him. He obviously went to a conference, you can read it on the DVD later or whatever, where he was radicalized, because the language they're talking about, how do you decapitate a king? How do you bring down power? This is incredible. This is the Royal Society of Arts. And this guy's the head of the actual project in Scotland at the moment, testing this basic income in this country, or in Britain. And he says now hear this is the language. We now have the opportunity to move the basic income conversation forward and identify practical ways to run a pilot which works locally and has global resonance. That is a globalist language. If you know anything about Agenda 2020 and 2030 and all these sorts of things, basic income can't be another small response, bearing in mind this is coming on the back of 5G and AI that's going to take your jobs. It should be radical, it should be world-changing, and it should be effective, and it's just a starting point. It's the beginning of a new social contract. So when 5G comes in, AI technology is going to come on board, you're going to lose your job, now you're going to be paid an income by the government, and it's the beginning of a new social contract. And he says, we need to start talking about land ownership, and we need to start talking about how you're taxed. And really what this is, in my interpretation, is, well, it's got a different idea, like you may ask Ian later, is that means you won't own land, you won't own a house, you won't own a car. Okay? This is where they're pushing this. They started to push all this with documents many, many years ago. I'm not going to get too much into this. This is all from published literature. And it all came about equality. Everyone's got to be equal. No, I've got no problem with equality. I couldn't give a damn what race, gender you are, as long as you're a decent person. But that was just the beginning. And they knew where they were going to take this, because they're then going to take into social equity and equity of outcome. Equity of outcome means everybody has to have an equal outcome. Okay, you can't earn more than someone else. You can't have more energy than someone else. You're all going to live in the same size house. There's documents demonstrating this. Don't have time to get into it. So to be fair, you have to have equity. All these things have to be equal. The amount of children you have, If you look at how this ideology, and it is an ideology, has been used before in the history of this planet, that also goes down to what your beliefs are and what you can say. And I think you just said someone was just gagged wanting to speak about certain things. So everything must be monitored. This is the reason why you're having so-called smart technology. The Fitbits, the things that go on you. Everything's got to be on it. You're just being teased with this stuff at the moment. You have to kind of understand where this is going to go. And that means you can't have privacy, okay? Privacy is gone, okay, according to these people, whoever these are, or they are. And isn't it interesting how things are just moving along at the same thing? Suddenly we're watching lots of programs about people being watched. Yeah, we're kind of warmed up to this. Loads of programs about kids being watched, adults being watched, whatever it is. And now you've got, and then Amazon Echo comes out, and suddenly isn't it great? I'm not bothered about having a microphone in my house that's recording everything I say, and is selling it on to third-party people. Can you imagine anyone here who's above a certain age, 20 years ago, 25, 30 years ago, anyone said, "I'm going to put a microphone in your house," and you would have gone, "You've got to be crazy." Okay, that. You talk to younger people today, no disrespect to anyone here that is more informed. Isn't it interesting that the head of Apple was really pushing these cars, this whole kind of car automotive technology, and you've got Uber, share your car. Airbnb, share your house. Isn't it interesting how this technology, these ideas are coming in? Autonomy requires privacy, and the psychological papers are very clear. You don't have privacy, you've got no autonomy. This way of framing the issue makes sense if you understand privacy solely as a political or legal concept, and its political importance is certainly part of what makes privacy so important. What is private is what is yours alone to control and without interference from others or the state. But the concept of privacy also matters for another deeper reason. It is intimately connected to what it is to be an autonomous person. The connection between loss of privacy and dehumanization is a well-known and ancient fact. You cannot be persuaded to give up your privacy. This technology is part of doing that. Anyone like this guy? He's calling for universal basic income. He thinks he's got a church, and he's the head of it, no doubt. Here's another guy from the Basic Income Earth Network, just to show you how this social side is changing. We need to create this new connected culture. Everyone's going to be connected.
So, again, a part of the G5 is not just the technology itself, and that it would have to be every 500 feet, which means they're already doing it. I've posted pictures. Around the world, they're cutting down every single tree on every block where the G5 is positioned. You're likely to have between 3 to 5 G5 towers on most buildings. Anything that can block it has to be removed. So it gets up higher if it's down low, like on a telephone pole. Everything that could be obstructed, the signal is cut down. There's no discussion of this. They had the power to do it, thanks to Bill Clinton passing a law in 1996 that allowed them to do this. So he's also talking about something more essential, and it's not just existential. With this new 5G technology, they literally will be able to monitor you everywhere you go. If you're in your car, what do you think that system they have, the satellite system, that satellite system is a live system. It can monitor everything you're saying in the car. It can tell exactly where you've been and keep a record of it, as Google does now. You go out, you travel somewhere, as long as you take your cell phone with you, even if it's turned off, they have a trip analysis of where you went, how long you spent, wherever you went. And do you want people to know every single thing about you, every single thing you do? Because that's where this is going. It's not just our physical health that is at risk. It is also one more step towards a complete surveillance state. I think I'll have some people on who were in the former Soviet Union and also in East Germany who were under the control of the Stasis and other countries that were for all intents and purposes, captive to the state. And right now, that's America. More on G5 and its ramifications, because it's more than health, it's freedom. And this audience in particular prizes freedom, freedom of expression, freedom of choice, and freedom of independent thought. Now I'm going to take a few moments and share what is number 28 in our ongoing series of articles challenging not the right of people to give their opinion, they have that right, but the fact that their opinion becomes more important to corporate media, to big pharma and other industries, than the actual facts as published in the scientific literature. This is on Stephen Barrett, Quackwatch, which he founded, and Wikipedia. Are these big pharma propagandists? For nearly 50 years, important discoveries revealed what is harmful to us and increases the incidence of disease, such as heart disease and obesity and diabetes and cancer. And they've been undermined by the mainstream media. At the same time, thousands of peer-reviewed studies indicating that basic and elementary interventions, such as something as simple as a plant-based diet, and regular exercise, and stress reduction practices such as meditation and yoga, are only treated peripherally and never conclusively. Speaking personally, if I conduct a lifetime and behavioral study, of which I've done 40, no matter how positive the results, no matter how many participants showed rapid improvements, contrary to the conventional medical paradigm, the full weight of the conclusions to be challenged by one person, Dr. Stephen Barrett, co-founder of Quackwatch. My research was disparaged as being unscientific and unproven, and therefore should be disregarded. At the same time, I am aware of anyone outside of the non-conventional medical community who has looked at Barrett's background and asked some fundamental questions. Foremost, sir, upon what basis can you, Jimmy Wales, the skeptics of Wikipedia, the editors of Wikipedia, challenge my results after thousands upon thousands of individuals have been helped with their illnesses? Aside from being a board-certified clinical nutritionist and a registered dietitian and a PhD in human nutrition and public health science with honors, I've been a keynote speaker invited by many scientific and medical conferences to share my research. My results aside, Barrett is afforded more weight by the media. I'll give you just one example of this. I was asked if I would agree to an interview, and I said sure. I'd done hundreds of interviews. But something intuitively told me this was not going to be a fair and objective interview. So it just so happens that on the day when the person was going to meet with me, I was being the keynote speaker at the Roosevelt Hotel in the Grand Ballroom on health and the new paradigms for the future. The place was packed, so packed that they were standing way deep around the walls and even sitting on the floors. So I thought, what better place to know whether or not what I do works or not than ask the audience? So I asked how many of your medical doctors, a lot of hands went up, nurses, hands went up, dietitians, hands went up, nutritionists, hands went up, psychologists, people in the health field. And then I said, how many of you today have been following protocols and are healthier because of it? Every hand went up. We're talking about thousands of hands. And one guy sitting right beside where I was standing, and this reporter was sitting, said, can I tell my story? And I said, I don't have time for people to tell their personal stories. You could tell it this woman. And this guy said, I had full-blown AIDS and was HIV infected, and I was dying. And I went to Gary's Tri-State Healing Center, and almost 2 years later, I have no disease. Woman looked at him, didn't ask for his name, nothing. And so I said, how many people have had end-stage cancers? Hold your hand. About 100 people. How are you today? Do you still have cancer, but are in remission, or you have no... And as I went through each disease, hands went up. So I finally turned to the person. This is before I started my lecture, about 20 minutes of this. And I said, you can ask me any question you want, but who is more of authority? Me stating something or these thousands of people who've experienced it, including physicians here using my protocols in their own private practice? She didn't interview a single person nor physician. But the person she did interview was Dr. Stephen Barrett. So his opinion of my work, having never met me, having never been in any of the support groups or the clinical studies, nor any of the counseling sessions, suddenly he was an expert, equal to all that I had achieved. This is the game that is played. Now, unless I'm mistaken, real journalists are supposed to interview their sources. A good medical journalist might also seek out participants in a study to receive testimonies about the study's success or failures. They would review protocols, analyze the research data, and you investigate the potential conflicts of interest and biases of the research and the researcher to qualify the conclusions accurately. To my knowledge, that has never been done with any objectivity to assess Barrett and Wikipedia and Jimmy Wales' authenticity to speak on subjects they criticize. Now, they have every right to criticize. That's fine. Why Wikipedia? Quite simply because Barrett's Quackwatch website has been a primary source of information to slander natural medicine, including nutritional therapies and vitamins and supplements. Now, Barrett's a former practicing psychiatrist, a practice he departed back in the 1990s. So why does his voice carry more authority than the full body of tens of thousands of peer-reviewed scientific published literature, of the hundreds of thousands of clinicians, and the hundreds of millions of patients and their clinical experience and the patient outcomes? To me, it is oxymoronic. Nevertheless, Consumer Reports, the New York Times and Jane Brody, the federal health agencies have relied upon Barrett's Quackwatch, while to my knowledge never scrutinizing its largely lack of knowledge and expertise in the fields it chastises. For 50 years, Stephen Barrett, now an anti-alternative medicine website, Quackwatch, and his National Council Against Health Fraud, have staged an offensive to discredit medical treatments and natural health systems that are considered outside of conventional medicine. Quackwatch has served as an arsenal of prejudiced articles and analysis for ongoing attacks on everything from chiropractic to homeopathy, from naturopathy and herbal medicine to acupuncture. The benefits of the therapeutic massage, attacked, nutritional therapies, attacked, and the benefits of certain vitamins and minerals, challenged. In its heyday, it can be said that it was the go-to site for the corporate media and large professional associations and institutions to acquire ammunition against alternative medicine's rising popularity. Fortunately, medical science does not stand still. It has become global. It continues to evolve. And some of the best medical institutions are not straitjacketed by the restrictions of conventional medicine as practiced in the United States. Consequently, Quackwatch becomes increasingly outdated as the years roll on. But the unfortunate fact is that it is still relied upon as a valid, reliable source of information to excoriate alternative medicine and practitioners of the natural healing arts. Wikipedia, for example, relies upon Quackwatch as obsolete research and subjective commentaries regularly, thereby performing a great disservice in keeping people suffering from debilitating diseases the opportunity to gain access about new cutting-edge research favoring alternative medicine's benefits for preventing and treating disease. It is therefore time, in my opinion, for Quackwatch and Stephen Barrett's commentaries to be critiqued honestly and objectively, and I believe that you will find failure after failure to be kept abreast of medical advances. It's time for Quackwatch to be shoveled into the dustbin of history. The example we will explore now is Barrett's flawed evaluation of the benefits of vitamin C. Barrett is not our nutritionist. He is not a dietitian. He is not a nutritional clinician. In our opinion, he displays only a very elementary understanding about nutritional biochemistry and science. Yet every nutritionist knows that humans, unlike most animals, do not synthesize vitamin C endogenously. At the same time, vitamin C is a crucial nutrient, and it can only be received from a very good diet, including supplementation. Unfortunately, the typical American diet, primarily based upon meat and carbohydrates, and sorely lacking in fruits and vegetables, which are high in vitamin C, like citrus and peppers and greens, does not provide maximum vitamin C levels on a daily basis. The National Institutes of Health recommends that Americans eat at least 5 servings of fruits and vegetables daily. This amount is a far cry from what the average American actually consumes, far less. It is estimated that over 95% of Americans do not eat the daily recommended amounts of greens. Furthermore, eating raw vegetables is ideal because vitamin C is water-soluble and can break down from overheating. The alternative is to take oral supplements. Now, Barrett and his colleagues at Quackwatch focus their attacks on vitamin C on two fronts. First, they argue that vitamin C does not prevent or lessen the duration of common colds and infections. And second, they claim the vitamin has no positive impact upon cancer prevention and treatment. That's strange, because Quackwatch only needs to turn to the National Institutes of Health's Office on Dietary Supplements to access sufficient medical data and scientific sources to discredit its own misinformation assumptions about vitamin C's limited benefits. The National Institutes of Health continues to support research into vitamin C's antioxidant activities that might prevent and hinder the progression of medical conditions in which oxidative stress is a causative factor, such as cancers, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, arthritic conditions, and chronic inflammation. Now, as we have indicated in earlier articles, Barrett and Quackwatch habitually cherry-pick their data to degrade natural health systems. The organization itself does not conduct, nor, to our knowledge, fund actual clinical studies and comprehensive reviews of the peer-reviewed literature to derive at its conclusions. It relies solely upon the work of others. Therefore, if a study supports Quackwatch's biases and favors the interests of pharmaceutical industry complex, then that is sufficient reason alone to rely upon it, even if the study's methodology, data collection, and conclusions and biases are markedly flawed. Well, for decades, Barrett has been on the offensive against famed Nobel laureate Linus Pauling and his work on vitamin C. However, it was Frederick Klenner who was first using high dose of vitamin C before Dr. Pauling's work on high dose vitamin C to treat the common cold and infections gained popularity and notoriety. In addition, Pauling and a Scottish colleague named Dr. Ewan Cameron also uncovered evidence that vitamin C may be beneficial for treating cancer, and Barrett and his posse of medical skeptics have long criticized Pauling's claims. But now, the growing scientific evidence has made it certain that vitamin C prevents and alleviates the severity of multiple infections due to bacteria, virus, and other parasites. Dr. Pauling's controversial claims are now being vindicated by good science. And then you have to look at one thing. So who do we believe? Why don't we start by looking at the peer-reviewed scientific literature done not by industries, but by independent science? In point of fact, we can now state that Linus Pauling and Ewan Cameron's study on terminal cancer undergoing traditional therapy, they lived 300 days longer than patients who didn't take the vitamin C. Also, we would be led to believe that pregnant women should not take vitamin C following the first trimester. Normal placental development begins to erode, and trophoblast cells start their programmed cell death and apoptosis. Oxidative stress contributes to the breakdown. Well, it's found that vitamin C helps reduce oxidative stress and therefore helps block some of that apoptosis, enables placental cell death to occur normally, not abnormally. So we now have more than enough studies in the peer-reviewed literature that shows that vitamin C does lessen the duration of cold and flu. In fact, today, the American Institute for Cancer Research is quick to reference the growing body of literature confirming that fruits and vegetables prevent cancer. And it's from these foods that we receive the greatest amount of vitamin C. And a long-term Harvard study published just last year of the International Journal of Cancer, a major respected journal, concluded that women who consume plenty of fruits and vegetables, particularly cruciferous vegetables, which are known to contain high levels of vitamin C, had significantly lower breast cancer risks. That was 182,000 women over the course of 30 years. But even the Mayo Clinic, which at one time was on board with the anti-vaccine train, has had to turn on the about-face and admit that intravenous vitamin C, which acts differently than oral intake, may have therapeutic benefits to fight against cancer. And so you have two groups, one relying upon old science before therapeutic amounts were high, and then the new science, looking at what the proper amount should be to make a difference. In our opinion, Stephen Barrett, Jimmy Wales, and Wikipedia skeptics act more like the custodians of propaganda for the pharmaceutical interest. The network of quack watchers may realize that the successes of natural supplements pose a significant threat to drug revenues. Vitamin C is a fraction of the cost of most prescription and over-the-counter drugs. In all fields of scientific discovery, including medicine and environmental studies, we should always keep an open mind. We should be able to have civil discourse, debate, and open forum discussions to share ideas as well as to have our own opinions challenged. Today, the New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, MSNBC, Fox, and Mother Jones act more like SWAT teams enforcing silence and censorship, condemnation, and punitive damages against those who challenge the dominant paradigm. For example, millions of parents of vaccine-injured children have conducted extraordinary amounts of personal research into vaccines' benefits and risks. Based upon their deep investigations, they have arrived at the full realization that these vaccines cause their children's injuries or even death. And these parents can cite scientific sources far better than their children's pediatricians or pharmacist or nurse. Similarly, those who challenge Monsanto's glyphosate and GMOs are only get greeted with ridicule. Yet taken in its fullness, the body of literature to be found on the National Institutes of Health PubMed falls on the side of the victims and those trying to expose the truth. And by the way, Dr. Barrett and Jimmy Wales and Wikipedia, have you read the 62,000 scientific entries referencing vitamin C on PubMed? How many physicians, federal health authorities, health journalists, pharmacists, have read these? Few or none. We have. Now, let's go into a studio, and on the phone right now, I'm told that we have two people, and we don't have a lot of time, but I'd like to introduce, let's see who we have here. We have Ron. Hi, Ron.
How are you?
Do we have Ron? Good. Ron, we don't have a lot of time, but you have something to say to Wikipedia and Jimmy Wales and the skeptics about the condition that you had, were faced with death, told to go into hospice care, and you came to a retreat. Tell us quickly what happened.
Yes. I'm someone who attended your retreats in the past and wanted to share my story. Now, after being diagnosed with two terminal end-stage diseases, namely chronic lymphocytic leukemia, known as CLL, and chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder, known as COPD, I was told that the only available treatment was for the CLL was chemotherapy and was only offered oxygen tanks and inhalers for the COPD. Now, the cause of death for my father was CLL and my two brothers, COPD. Being near the hospice care myself, imagine how those treatment options made me feel. Given the deaths of my father, my brothers, and now a close friend with leukemia who chose chemo, I feel the choice to go to two previous retreats has paid great dividends. My last three exams shows my lungs are completely clear and my leukemia is improving dramatically. My chemo scheduled in January was canceled, and my oncologist encouraged me to keep doing what I'm doing. Now, at the first retreat, I completed an ultramarathon of 30 miles and 27 miles on the retreat this past October. I may be the only person to have done that with two end-stage terminal diseases. At the retreat, I learned about detoxing, techniques for de-stressing, the importance of exercising, healing through nutrition, reflection, de-journaling, and letting go of negative belief systems which don't serve me. Replacing them with new ways of thinking, giving up the old me for the new, finding my authentic self and exceeding my limitations. And what better place to do this than being in nature? Contemplating my thoughts in the beautiful rose garden, the butterfly, healing, massage, and yoga huts. Water aerobics in the mineralized swimming pool, the beautifully presented vegan meals, and much, much more. Now, I've seen others without health challenges and those with diabetes, high blood pressure, obesity, MS, and other health challenges learn new techniques for improving the quality of their lives, leaving the retreat healthier and happier. Now,
by the way, Ron, hold on, Ron. Yeah. Do you remember a woman from, I believe she was from either Kentucky or Tennessee, She had come morbidly obese. She had diabetes. I believe her fasting blood sugar in the morning was 190, and within 1 week her blood sugar was 80, and she finished the marathon, 26 miles. And she couldn't walk 3 miles. She couldn't walk a mile when she came. Do you remember her?
Yes, I do. I do. She was from Tennessee, actually. And her blood sugars were high regularly before then, but she completed the marathon. I was amazed. And her blood sugar went all the way down to 80.
What about the woman with advanced multiple sclerosis who couldn't walk without falling over, and she did the marathon as well?
Well, not only did she do the marathon, she did 27 miles. I couldn't believe that, but I saw it with my own eyes.
Well, fortunately, we filmed it. And fortunately, we had seven physicians there, and they were all out there in the golf carts in case anybody couldn't make it. They were going to be picked up, and we had nine nurses all witnessing what medicine has never achieved, not once in its history. And yet,
that's
here's
correct.
The issue that ties in with what I said earlier. Instead of looking at you and all the thousands, tens of thousands of people who've improved their health where medicine failed, they would still rely upon someone who has never met you, never seen the protocols, never did anything, but criticize it's not possible because they couldn't do it. That's the problem we face today. So it wouldn't matter if I had a million of you reversing terminal illnesses on the program. Look, following this program is Eutrice Lee. She called me from recovery where they opened up her chest and closed it back up and says, you got to go into hospice care. And her brother's a mainstream physician down there because your lungs are totally filled, stage 4B cancer, lung cancer, plus diabetes, plus high blood pressure, etc. And she said, can you help me? I said, sure. And 4 months later, she did a championship race and won, lost 100 pounds. And blood sugar normal, blood cancer no longer killing her. So these are the things. But dare they ever interview these people? Instead, they interview skeptics and people who don't believe in any of this to begin with. We have another person on the line. Her name is Isil. Hi, Isil.
Hi, Gary. Congratulations okay. on your lifetime achievement. You've been
yeah, that
on the
was
radio
a surprise.
I've been alive.
Isil, real quick, did you yes. have advanced end-stage cancer?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have any cancer today?
No, I am cancer-free.
Okay. And you've attended how many retreats?
Three.
All right. And you're following the protocols?
Yes.
And how's your quality of life?
I'm loving life. 8 years ago, I gave up on life, and I fought off cancer three different times before I came to one of the retreats. And I've learned so much from the retreats. I've learned how to de-stress, how to have mindful health, how to change my diet, how essential exercising is, how essential the environment is. I became a very loving and caring person, expressing my true self, enjoying life, loving it, becoming a better role model for my friends and my family, and to realize that medication is not always the answer. And with all the fruits and the juices and the animals and the environment at the retreat, you get to reboot yourself and to reflect on yourself and to see what you can truly be in life and how to be helpful and very caring and loving in life.
Good. Are you coming down to the upcoming retreat we're doing for WBAI as a fundraiser to help them raise some money and pay for bills?
Yes.
Good. Well, then anyone in the audience who wants to join Isil and Ron and a lot of others who have been there and who've changed their lives and are living testimonies to what is possible, you'll have a chance to speak with them. Luann, give the number for all of the listeners. Again, this is for a fundraiser for WBAI. It's the last week of April, first week of May. I don't promise anyone cures. I don't want anyone coming and saying, oh, Gary's going to cure me of something. That's not how it works. Instead, I'm there to help facilitate change and help the change that I believe is necessary for a person to surrender fear, insecurity, angst, anger, rage, and to get into healing and self-love, and to really do a whole mind-body makeover. And in the process, you can leave a lot of diseases behind, as evidenced by how many have done this. And if it was one person, you could say it's a coincidence. If it was two people, you'd say, well, you know, that might happen. What happens when it's thousands of people? This is the story that the media will never tell you. These are the protocols mainstream media will never use. Luann, give the number, please.
Surely. It's 903-881-7008. That's 903-881-7008. And Gary, I am one of those people who have had the unique privilege of witnessing for the past 25 years thousands and thousands of people who have reversed chronic conditions only because they decided to take their whole life back and their health back. And I interview everyone to make sure it's the right event for you. You've got to be ready for this change. You have to tell me how you are worthy to even get there. So
negative people are not involved. Don't come if you're really a hostile, angry, negative, bitter person. It's not the right environment for you. This is for people who want to have a life, optimism, and bring joy back and not look at themselves as a perpetual victim. Because the energy that has to go into changing a victim's mindset so that they're no longer thinking themselves as a victim versus a person who wants a chance to start over and recreate and reorchestrate and be the new architect of a whole new them, that's who it's for. So it's not just for people who are sick, because I never ask anyone what their disease is. I'm not there to treat or diagnose. I'm there to help. But the fact that that energy and the protocols can make a difference is what's important. Luann's number is 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. I believe the first week is filled, but she'll tell you. And I believe the second week we have two or three places open. So, Luann?
Yes.
Luann, would you be alive today had you not attended the retreat that began your process of change in Texas?
Absolutely not. I can say that without any hesitation. I was on a downward spiral, and I went to one of these expos to see, is there something else that I could do? And you were having a retreat, and my whole life changed for the better.
Good. Well, Luann is an example, but there are many other people who are example, and we're just going over the menus, all original gourmet vegan delicious menus, and we even have an orchard so that you'll be able to go out and pick yourself some fresh fruit that's in season, as some of this stuff was started back in the 1920s. So they're really heirloom trees. And there's a lot of quiet time. We don't talk when we eat. And there are places where there's no talking. There's just where people can do deep, insightful meditation, journal writing. There's counseling that comes with this as well. Water aerobics. Lots of new classes that are going to be shared. And do as little or as much as you want. So it's something, and I wanted the people to hear this, because sometimes we live in a world that is so jaded, so negative, so fatalistic, that we fail to understand how many positive things are going on, and this is all positive. Thank you all for listening. I want you to go to prn.fm and download the articles where we're challenging Wikipedia, but unlike Wikipedia, if we can find any error we made that they can show us as an error, we'll change it. Whereas on their site, there are many of us, from Deepak Chopra to Cheryl Atkinson, the award-winning reporter, to Rupert Sheldrake, one of the greatest minds on the planet, and hundreds of others. They can't make any changes. You're supposed to. They don't allow it. Ah, well, how about that? Then they're creating content or controlling content, and that is in violation of their IRS standing. And that's why I put up a letter for you all to look at. And if you agree with it, contact the Inspector General of the Internal Revenue Service and ask for an investigation. Let them find out what they will do. Let Congress do hearings and see how objective is this source. Just like Facebook that is being challenged, Google being challenged, Twitter being challenged, we're challenging Wikipedia, and will continue to do so. Thank you all for listening. Listen tonight, 7 o'clock, Powerful Investigative Reporting Hour. Have a nice day, everyone.